The Investment Trust Show, brought to you by Henderson Global Investors, managing investment trusts since 1934.
Welcome to our regular weekly programme, The Investment Trust Show, brought to you in association with Henderson Global Investors. Each week we explore the main features, factors and developments affecting investment trusts. And this week we're going to look at investing in UK small caps. To do that, we're joined in studio by Harry Nimmer, manager of the Standard Life UK Smaller Companies Trust, and also, as ever, Share Radio's senior analyst, Ed Bauscher. Harry, thank you for coming in. Smaller companies are obviously of great interest often to private investors. Do you feel that all investors ought to have exposure to the smaller company sector?
Most definitely. For additional returns, the long-term record of smaller companies is very strong. You just have to look at the work by Professors Dimpson and Marsh of the London Business School. There's an extra 4% per annum to be had from smaller companies. This is their long-term 50, 60-year studies. So it's definitely worth having exposure.
And this is despite the fact that many small companies, of course, want to keep the capital to grow the business. So they don't tend to be big dividend payers in their early life, do they?
There's a multitude of different types of smaller companies, some paying dividends. But I would agree, it's mainly about capital growth. But capital growth is quite often accompanied by good, strong dividend growth too. And that shows our investment trust has grown its dividend at 23% per annum over the last 10 years.
Wow.
Off a low base, but the dividend growth has been historically strong.
And what's your instinct for the reason that smaller companies can grow, according to the LBS study? Is it simply that a smaller company has more room to grow?
I think that's a large part of it. It's much easier to double the size of a smaller company than it is to double in size if you're BP or Shell. The law of not large numbers comes into play here. I think another point, though, is that these are companies that are often under-researched and have not been spotted yet by the mass of investors. Also, you've got to remember that the world is changing quickly. New business methodologies are coming along. The internet has changed a lot of businesses fundamentally. Sometimes smaller companies, without the history and baggage, methodology and assets of a very large company, can move nimbly into markets and just take over very quickly. We've seen a lot of examples of that.
So that's the sort of speedboat versus the oil tanker sort of analogy.
Well, just look at areas like airlines, for instance. The traditional flagship carriers being upstaged by the online focused ones like EasyJet and Ryanair, Jet2, Dark Group, and the rest. That's one. We see it in Hargreaves Lansdowne in fund supermarkets. We see it Rightmove versus the old regional newspaper advertising model, Money Supermarket. Very fundamentally different ways of buying services and goods that smaller companies, new names, have come in and dominated quite quickly.
Mm. Now, almost 40% of your fund, though, is shares in the FTSE 250, which you wouldn't necessarily think of as being small cap companies, would you? Well, now, are these sort of minnows that have grown to be bigger, or is there another reason?
It depends on your definition very much. The standard definition for smaller companies in the UK is the Numis Smaller Companies Index, and that covers the bottom 10% of the stock market by market capitalization. Now, that's a separate index to the FTSE series. That means that there's actually an overlap between the two. And indeed, the bottom half of the FTSE 250 is within the bottom 10% of the stock market and in our benchmark, Numis Smaller Companies Index. So you'll find all smaller company investors, all standard ones, will have a good selection of FTSE 250 stocks below the cutoff point, which is around about £1.4 billion right now. Mm.
And then roughly 18% in the FTSE Small Cap Index, mm-hmm. and then rather more, almost 40% in AIM stocks. Now, is there a difference from your point of view for companies that are on AIM as opposed to the main market, or does it not matter? Is it the nature of the business that's more important?
Our process is identical regardless of which market, whether it's AIM or full list. We look for exactly the same things. Just on AIM, it has been historically, if you look at the indices, a poorly performing market. It's has been prone to fads and the dot-com bubble, oil and gas, mining fads. Companies with no earnings whatsoever that crash and burn in many cases. But I've certainly noticed in recent years there is a maturity coming into AIM. Better quality companies across the board. There's a better sectoral balance. There are also a very important tax benefits these days that have been noticed and are pushing, I would say, the better sort of AIM stocks along.
I hope the Chancellor doesn't notice that.
Well, things can change. But I would say against that, AIM stocks are smaller businesses growing quickly. They're creating jobs. They're creating jobs and wealth. And AIM actually has been a great success story in new business formation, creating jobs and wealth. And I think it would be really quite foolish of a chancellor to change the rules there.
But what about the sort of AIM stocks where you've got Chinese businesses listed on London? Would you steer clear of those?
I would, actually. I would be quite careful as to where the stock was domiciled. And I would expect the sort of disclosure in terms of the board, the corporate governance. I expect the corporate governance to pass muster and be similar to what you might find on a full list. And many AIM stocks of the better sort do this. And you should really, in general, avoid overseas companies using the UK as a kind of place of convenience, I would say.
Is that now one reason that you didn't do as well as you might perhaps last year or lost a little bit of performance because you weren't really in any mining stocks, are you? Presumably that's one of the reasons.
Well, that is absolutely correct. That benefited us very strongly, even no mining and no oil and gas stocks in 2014-15, but in 2016 it was a problem. Now, one thing I should say, you're absolutely right, part of our approach is taking a lower risk methodology. We're looking for lower risk companies. Lower risk actually in smaller companies equals higher returns. We have found that the academic wisdom is turned on its head. And smaller mining stocks, smaller oil and gas stocks tend to be high risk. Yes. They tend to be overseas, one-shot businesses, probably not profitable, certainly don't pay dividends, very capital consumptive. And we have historically tended to downplay them, particularly minings. Our only mining stock I can remember investing in is a thing called First Quantum, a copper producer that had several prospects and had proper corporate governance and it was a reputable business.
Can we talk then about how you decide on which shares to put into your portfolio? I mean, you already sort of talk about some of the things that you want, but you mentioned early on how sometimes these shares are just ignored by everybody else. So presumably you're prospecting in areas that are not necessarily visible to many other investors.
We're quite systematic and we start at the bottom. We start with the companies and we have our top-level guidelines. We're attempting to buy tomorrow's larger companies today. Growth, quality and momentum are key to us. Companies with strong earnings visibility. We really don't like risk in portfolios. We don't turn over our portfolio very much. We tend to run our winners. And there's an important section in the middle. We have a screening process, a matrix. We call it the matrix. It's been in existence at Standard Life Investments since the mid-90s, and it is really good for concentrating your efforts on factors, growth, quality, momentum factors. We look at director dealing. We look at Z scores. And we weight these factors. We backtest it. And high scores are buys, low scores within the portfolio as ourselves. And we use this to produce a shortlist. We then like to meet companies and discuss their businesses. This is with chief executives and finance directors. We get great corporate access, and we like to test the resilience of an individual company's business model. And we like to check for rogue numbers coming into our matrix. That's how it's been for 20 years in our open-ended, our OIC, and since 2003 in our close, in our trust.
You mentioned Z-scores. Is it possible briefly to explain what they are?
Okay. Altman Z-scores, to be exact. It's a composite measure. There are about half a dozen ratios that go into this. Now, Altman he's actually a professor of finance in America. He's very old now, but I think he's still active. And he was trying to search for, he was a fixed interest investor at the time. He was trying to search for companies that were going to go bust in the next couple of years. And he had a tipping point for his Z score. We do the same thing. We turn it on its head. We try and avoid these companies. Mm. We want the best Z scores, not the worst.
Okay. We'll be back in just a moment.
The Investment Trust Show, brought to you by Henderson Global Investors, managing investment trusts since 1934.
And today, specifically, we're talking about smaller companies. We're in the studio with Harry Nimmer, manager of the Standard Life UK Smaller Companies Trust. And as ever, Ed Bauscher, Share Radio senior analyst. And this is the moment in which Ed will take us through some of the performance figures.
So these, as ever, are performance figures. So net asset value, the underlying value of the stocks that Harry's Trust owns, not the share price, not the same thing. Over the last year, the NAV of the Trust has risen 22.5%, 6th out of 17 in the sector. Over the last 3 years, up almost 34%, 33.9%, 8th out of 14. Over the last 5 years, up 109.4%, 8th out of 14. Of course, this takes no account of any dividends that may have been paid, and for what it's worth, I should declare I also own some shares in the trust.
Oh, and are you a happy investor?
I'm a happy investor, yes.
So, Harry, Ed and I are always fascinated by the story of Fevertree because we keep looking at it, not buying it. You bought it presumably very early on. It's been very successful for you. It's had quite a big holding. I'm assuming you're relatively happy with that. You're going to keep hold of it. Is it needs still a buy? Many people are just fascinated by this company.
It's in our top 10. It's still a buy. We bought it at listing at 1.34 pence. It's I believe it's £15 now, under 2 years later. Run Your Winners is the name of the game. It's there's been a bit of a revolution in the mixer drinks sector. Look at your supermarket shelves. See the shrinking section that Schweppes hold and the growing section that that Fevertree hold. They've developed an international brand. It's huge in Europe. It's huge in North America as well. I think the public is wanting choice. They're wanting choice in alcoholic drinks, in gins in particular on this occasion, but also it can be dark spirits. They're also wanting, if they're buying a premium product, they want a premium mixer to go with it. And they're unhappy with being taken for a grant. Indeed, possibly hoodwinked by some of the traditional manufacturers that actually put saccharin in their full fat tonics, which and covering the unpleasant aftertaste with, flavour masking agents.
So clearly not only a shareholder in the company, but proselytising on behalf of it as well.
Absolutely passionate about this. I think it's a very measured approach that they have. They're absolutely really impressed. The key point for them is the provenance of the product, having the highest quality materials in terms of sourcing of quinine and sugar and all the other ingredients that go into tonic and their range of drinks.
You talked about how Schweppes, you know, who is sort of being squeezed out in the supermarkets. Do you worry then, or might you even look forward to the fact that Fevertree might be bid for? We've seen several instances where large drinks companies want to snap up the companies that seem to have more feel for what people want than they perhaps do.
Anything is possible. The share, the price rating on the stock is quite high right now, but I think when there is real change in a what used to be a really quite a dull but highly profitable sector for the incumbents. If there is real change and real growth to come, then it's worrying for these larger, huge groups, food and drink products groups, and they might feel they might have to take action. And what we can say, it does come out of these vast mergers, the Kraft Cadburys. Remember, there was a certain amount of a scandal about the contents of the Cadbury's cream egg. Now, some yes. say, I mean, I can't really comment on that. There was value engineering going on there in terms of what went into the product. One has to be careful what one says here. But I think it's characteristic of that brands, they're not being nurtured like they used to by these financial operators who wish to gain market share and boost profits at the expense of everything else.
But the consumer is becoming slightly more savvy and
the consumer
wise
is becoming more discerning and wanting choice and cares about the provenance.
So what other investments of yours are you really excited about at the moment? And clearly, you get very passionate about the companies you believe in.
Yes, there's one, I think, very interesting company. And again, there's many, but I go on for ages on this, but it's called First Derivatives PLC, rather a mundane title, but unusually here, it's a software and services company. It's based in Newry in Northern Ireland. It's still run by its founder, Brian Conlon. We've been involved in this company for since 2010. We own a little over 10% of the business. It specializes in what is sometimes these days called big data, big fast data. Mm. And they own a software called KX. It's actually developed in Palo Alto, but they control it now. And it's starting to really gain traction. Firstly, in the financial services sector, where they sold their product to the likes of exchanges and regulators to try and catch insider dealers, spotting unusual share price and volume movements in real time. And you can actually put brakes based on their software. But they've managed to broaden out into many other areas, and we're seeing them doing deals with the likes of Thomson Reuters in the energy utility sector, in marketing research. We saw them do a deal recently with Airbus. So they're moving their world-beating technology into many sectors, and that's causing quite a sharp acceleration in growth. And because they're based in a sort of considered to be sort of backwoods sort of a place like Newry, a lot of people overlook it, and it's a fantastic company.
I mean, it's interesting hearing you talk so passionately about your stocks, Harry. You know, I've invested in smaller companies and I get equally passionate, and then often it goes wrong. You know, the risk with smaller companies is big. Things can go wrong badly. You mentioned the long-term research showing outperformance, but we don't know that's going to continue. How can you reassure listeners who are worried about potentially higher risk here?
I cannot promise that our investments will not go wrong, if you see what I mean. All investments have that potential, and I've certainly had a fair few over the years. But in our process, we actually sift for lower risk companies, companies that are less likely to go wrong. And the companies that go wrong most often are companies that are blue sky in their character in terms of their businesses, their ideas trying to become businesses, and companies with compromised balance sheet and cash flow characteristics, companies where there's very little or poor disclosure about the people involved and their accounts, or companies that are driven by excessive amounts of acquisition. But I should say, it's not just smaller companies that can go wrong. Very large companies can go wrong too. We've seen that in the banking crisis. We've seen it in when technology moves on and outflanks companies like maybe like Nokia and Kodak, where there's a real change of technology. So it's not limited to smaller companies. We've actually never had a company in our go bust on us. Some have got fairly close. We've never had a company go bust. We don't often see dividend cuts. We prefer growth, steady growth, with lots of visibility.
Now, interestingly, you not only manage a smaller company investment trust, but also an open-ended fund. So what are the essential differences? I mean, it's probably unfair to ask you which you prefer, but are there differences in the way you look after them?
It's a little bit of horses for courses here. Some prefer one and the other. Some types of investors and advisors prefer another. The open-ended is it's big. It's $1.25 billion. I would say it's. It's the both stocks have a similar number of shares, about 50 to 60. The open-ended version can't go down quite as small. It tends to stop at about 200 million market cap. So it's slightly, shall we say, less risky. The closed-ended version, the trust, can go down to below 100 million, although it's fair to say that that portion of the portfolio is quite small. It also has gearing, and there's a, i.e. it can borrow. Yep. It has a convertible unsecured loan stock. So that adds another element of risk. It can help do well in rising markets, but it does count against you in falling markets. So, and also the dealability for larger investors is lower in the trust than it is in the open-ended version. But the reality for the mass of small investors, the liquidity is there in both vehicles.
Now, I'm curious, you run two smaller companies funds. What happens when smaller companies become bigger companies, which is what you're obviously hoping for, but does it come to get to a sort of level where you feel you have to let one of your darlings go?
Yes, absolutely. And indeed, I haven't checked the figure recently, but there was a time when about 9 of the FTSE 100 were former members of our smaller companies fund. And we clearly, if a stock and one or two have reached the FTSE 100, it really has to go. And the last two that did this was about a year ago, Paddy Power, or Paddy Power, yes. Betfair, when it merged in there. And before that was Hargreaves Lansdown. And before that was ASOS. And another one that's kind of there is Rightmove.
Well, Harry, thank you very much indeed for talking to us. That's Harry Nimmer, manager of the Standard Life UK Smaller Companies Trust. I've written down low risk with small companies, run your winners. Ed Bausch, our senior analyst, thank you very much too.
At Henderson Global Investors, we believe in helping people to make informed investment decisions by sharing our knowledge. We are a proud sponsor of the Investment Trust Show on Share Radio, and we currently manage a range of 13 investment trusts in a wide range of sectors, geographies, and markets across the globe. Visit us at hendersoninvestmenttrusts.com. Henderson Global Investors is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority to provide investment products and services.